Hello everyone and welcome to Video Games and Coffee. I'm your host Daniel and today I'd like to talk about what has to be one of the strangest games I've ever played that stars an absolute killer red-haired female that's great with a gun. And no, I'm not talking about Jessica Rabbit or the Black Widow. I'm talking about Jesse Faden, and this episode is all about Control. Okay, welcome everyone. Welcome back to my returning listeners. Thank you very much for following me this far. Obviously, this show is your thing if you are. Thank you for that. I wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for those of you that are supporting me. And big welcome to those new listeners. If this is your very first episode of Video Games and Coffee, I hope you enjoy it. I do give you, it's just an intro to a game. Give a little bit of my personal opinion. I don't give any spoilers. We don't do a run through of the game. I don't give away the ending. Nothing like that. So it's a safe show to listen to. And if you're on the fence about trying to game out, I hope I help you make that decision. And even if you've played the game that I'm covering, I hope to hear from you and hear your opinions, good or bad. And I'm sure if they're bad, I have no doubt I'll be hearing about it. So that's what social media is for, unfortunately. So, all right. Well, here we go. This was actually a tough episode for me to do, especially to write and to organize my thoughts and what I wanted to say, because usually what I'll do is I'll open up with a little background on the game as far as who developed it and who the protagonist is or antagonist. And then I go into what the game's about, roughly without giving anything away. And then I go into the gameplay, the first gameplay, right? As soon as you start a new game, a new game file and you kick it off that way. This was very difficult for me to do that because the events of the game, because it's a weird game overall, it was hard to put like what happens kind of first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, because you don't really know what's going on throughout the game. They give you some kind of explanation, but as far as kind of doing... First off, a three-act structure doesn't even exist in this one, I don't believe. If I'm wrong, please let me know. But it's just a bunch of random, spooky, creepy, and unusual events that leads up to kind of a conclusion. I don't even know if I myself have finished this game. That's how vague everything is. To me, it looked like I finished the game, and I went right into the DLC that I had already purchased because there was no definitive ending for me. Maybe you'll interpret it differently. Maybe you'll feel about the game differently than I did. But it was such a difficult one to organize my thoughts on as far as the bullet points and what I wanted to go over that I'm actually recording this and posting it one day later than I usually do. Because I just need a little more time to see how I'm going to take this one on. And I hope it's not disappointing. I feel like I might ramble on about certain things simply because I'm still trying to describe it. I do hope that people who have played Control are listening to this because you would know what I'm saying. You would know where I'm coming from. I've never quite played a game like this. But that's why I really enjoy it. That's why I would play it again. And that's why I wanted to do an episode on it. Because it is, to me, it is a very special game that you need to experience for yourself. And I hope that Remedy is doing what I think they're doing, which is kind of putting out games that are tied together in kind of like in the same universe. And I'll talk about that in a little bit and what I mean about that. But This is definitely going to feel like a less scripted episode because I have a few notes, a few bullet points, and I'm just trying to talk about it as I go because it was difficult to put it down on paper. And don't let my lack of kind of organization with this episode put you off on even trying the game. You absolutely should, whether you know of Remedy games or not, whether you've played their other games, doesn't matter. The game is a really good experience, and I highly recommend it for anyone that's been eyeballing it and wanted to give it a shot. And I guess if I were to try to convince someone to try it or not try it, and they asked me, you know, what feel am I going to get playing this game? What do I have to be into to play this game? I would say, for sure, if you liked the Twilight Zone, you will like playing this game. I think, plain and simple, I think that's a perfect way to put it. So I guess this more raw episode, I guess it's a good thing, right? Since my show is about giving you that impression that I had and what to expect, I guess it might be helpful. So here we go. I hope I don't let you down. Control. A game developed by Remedy Games, published by 505 Games back in 2019. This was a weird one. I'll be honest with you. Throughout the episode, I probably will emphasize how weird it actually is, but that does not mean it's a bad game. You've got to captivate your audience and your players somehow. And Remedy just did it by giving you a game with a story so strange that you must go on. As they say, it's like looking at a train wreck. You just can't look away. You gotta keep looking at it and see what happens next. But yeah, it was weird. It was weird. It's a very gorgeous game. Don't get me wrong. I played it on, so I have an Xbox One S and I have a PS4 Pro. If those are your two choice, if you have the choice, it does look quite a bit better on the PS4 Pro. If you don't have a choice, then it is available on both. It's also available on PC as well. And speaking of weird, it's actually available on the Nintendo Switch, which I did not. There's so many big titles that I wish were on the Switch that I was really surprised that this was available as well. But it's like a streaming, it's like one of those streaming games that it's just kind of like online play. So you can actually, you download a bit of data for it on your Switch, but you can actually play it online. But holy shit, you better make sure that you're on that 5 gigahertz channel and there's no physical obstruction between you and your router, because any little hiccup like that, man, it makes this game run, it's unforgiving on the Switch, at least for me. So it didn't run that smoothly. I haven't played it since. Maybe they've updated it since then. But as soon as I found out that it was kind of a cloud game, I didn't really give it much thought. So I just kind of tried it out just because I was curious. But I already had it on PC, and I actually bought it on PC, and I forgot about it because I got it. It was some killer sale that was going on. And when I know that there's a really good, a very well-received game on sale for some just ridiculously low price, I go and I snatch it up on PC, and then I'm ashamed to admit that sometimes I forget about it and I don't play it for a long time. But when I eventually did come around to playing it, I played it on the PS4 Pro, and it's gorgeous. It runs really well on it, and it looks awesome compared to the Xbox One S. Not knocking the Xbox One S, but I think I think the PS4 Pro is the way to go if those are your two choices. So the game itself is in the third-person perspective, and you play as a character named Jesse Faden, played by Courtney Hope, who did the voice and motion capture for it. She actually also played Beth Wilder in Quantum Break, a game that I covered a couple of episodes ago, also by Remedy. Just changing her hairstyle a bit, they did a great job making both characters look different from each other, even though both are based on Hope's likeness, almost identical. Jesse Faden's overall style and personality is killer, and she is by no means a damsel in distress. She's not an overly sexualized character at all, but still achieves a look that's both sexy and tough as nails. She is bad to the bone. From the waist down, she's got the tight black pants and the boots, which is the sexy. And up top, she's wearing the black leather jacket with the sleeves partially rolled up, with what could be a tank top underneath. That's the bad part of the outfit right there. So as soon as you see her introduced in the game in the very beginning, she's got "fuck off, you little shit" written all over her. So she's very intimidating. Look, if talking to a girl, even if it wasn't a super popular girl in high school, it made me have a panic attack, you know, I'd get the nervous sweats, and I'd eventually just, you know, probably wouldn't do it. I just wouldn't do it. If I had to talk to somebody like Jesse Faden, like at a party or something, that would have just made me throw up all over myself, just involuntarily. So very intimidating, very tough looking, but very attractive as well, which is kind of weird to say, because by saying that Jesse Faden is attractive, I'm saying that Courtney Hope's attractive. So, so before you ask your significant other, it's like, hey, do you find this video game character, you know, hot? Because I do. Remember, you're not showing them a picture of like Chun-Li or Lara Croft, who are not based on real people. You're showing them a picture of Courtney Hope. So indirectly, directly, you're also saying Courtney Hope's hot. So keep that in mind, guys and girls. But moving on to the style of the game, the style of the surroundings and the environment in the game, I would have described it as like 1920s Art Deco, which I absolutely love. I think of, you know, patterned, really elaborate patterned, like wallpaper and shit, and machines and furniture that's really old from the early 1900s. So Art Deco is kind of what I would have described it, for the lack of a better term. Think of the style of, for example, Batman the Animated Series from the early 90s. That kind of style. Not the New Adventures of Batman and Robin, that second wave that came in with kind of, you know, anime Robin. And all you Batman fans know what I'm talking about. So I'm talking about the first wave of Batman the Animated Series episodes. So think of that kind of Art Deco style. So I actually looked up the appropriate term that they were going for in this building that you walk around for a long time. It's actually called Brutalist Architecture. Brutalist Architecture, which sounds so fucking metal. Because, I mean, if you were to describe to me that where you live, if you live in a, you know, a mansion or castle that's brutalist architecture, I would have thought you were saying, like, man, you live in a cave with skulls and shit, with sharp objects and everything hanging on the wall. But no. So just think of Art Deco, if you can picture that in your head. Very, very old school. The game is kind of out of time in a way. And what I mean is the style of the inside of this building looks like it could be from the 1920s, but then you see tech in the building that's completely modern. Even the way Jesse Faden is dressed, it's like seeing somebody in an old-timey room, but takes out a smartphone. You see what I'm trying to say? So it is kind of out of time. So the whole building itself must be that architecture and style, because it may be an old building, and really, in present day, like outside, everything is just present day, you know, 2000, not 2021, but 2019 when this game came out. But you're in a building that's just gigantic. So think of, you know, if you walk into a Walgreens, but then there's enough rooms and shit that you can, you're like in Castlevania. Now granted, they don't show you the complete exterior of the building. So yes, maybe it could take up 48 city blocks, and I just don't know about it. But the building that you walk in is very deceiving because of the amount of traveling and walking and shit that you do inside this building. It just goes on and on. And not just left to right, but up and down, man. It's like there's, you almost feel like there's 52 floors that goes down into the earth. I mean, it's just, it's a massive map that you have to traverse throughout the game. So let's talk about what to expect in the beginning of this game, how it actually starts off. Now, because the game is just really strange, here's the gist of it. This is what the game's about. You show up to this building and you have your own agenda, but you are called there to do something else, okay? Really quickly, you're supposed to be the new director. You're actually looking for your brother, and you're essentially walking through a gigantic building that's kind of like a mix of Tony Stark's R&D department and the fucking relic room from Odin's lair where he kept like the Tesseract and shit. And that's really what this building and the events that follow, that's kind of like the best way to describe it. In fact, the game from beginning to end. So first impressions here, okay? This is what happens. So you're Jesse Faden and you're walking up to and into this massive building. So you see, you kind of get a glimpse of the outside of it. It's very boring. It looks like a building that you could pass every single day on your way to and from work and not even notice that it was there. It kind of looks like a public library. So it's that, pretty inconspicuous, but I mean, really, government buildings, I can't imagine they're super fancy anyway, because that's what this is, a secret government agency that this building houses. And this building is the headquarters for the Federal Bureau of Control, the FBC. And what they do is they study what you see abbreviated throughout the game, AWE, Altered World Events. Now, this building is called the Oldest House. Don't really know how old it is, but that's what they call it. You'll hear it referenced throughout the game as the Oldest House. So that's where the Federal Bureau of Control is. So they study altered world events. And so the game isn't necessarily supernatural. It's weird, kind of like otherworldly shit. Kind of like, I don't know, maybe parallel universe or something like that. So it's not necessarily supernatural as in the, ghost kind of shit. And I don't know why I just sounded like Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis and, Beetlejuice just then, but sorry about that. That's what they research these events. Now, the really cool thing about Control and what Remedy is doing is that they have tie-ins to Alan Wake, which I thought was awesome. There are references to Alan Wake. In fact, one of the collectibles that you get is a book that, the author of that book is Alan Wake. There are references to Bright Falls, which is where the events of Alan Wake took place. Reference to the numerous, coffee thermoses that you collected in Alan Wake in this game, which I thought was awesome. It was outstanding. What I was a little disappointed about was that there were no references, and I had looked this up online, there are no references to Quantum Break, which took, that game actually came out before Control did. I was disappointed, because you would think that if this agency, this secret government agency, if they study weird shit that happens, like the stuff in Alan Wake, that they would have absolutely studied and been aware of the events of Quantum Break, but there are no tie-ins. The only tie-in to Quantum Break is the fact that Courtney Hope is in both games, and that's it. So I don't really mean for that to be a spoiler in any way, because that really doesn't have anything to do with the actual story or gameplay in Control. But hopefully it gets you psyched a little bit to give it a shot. So Jesse Faden shows up to the FBC building, the Oldest House, steps into an empty lobby with an empty security checkpoint, and proceeds to walk around, see, you know, what exactly is going on. There's nobody there. And then you meet like a creepy janitor that kind of sounds like a Muppet. And with you hear the internal monologue of Jesse Faden throughout the entire game. So kind of lets you know what's on her mind. So she is there. Now, here's another strange thing about it. She's there because she's looking for her missing brother who supposedly was kidnapped. His name was Dylan. And she believes that this agency had something to do with his kidnapping and, you know, happened to know where his current whereabouts is. That seems to be her main goal, her main objective of control. Now, she also is there because she's the new director of the FBC, which is, that's weird because it's not really explained how she even got this job, how she's qualified for this job, who contacted her about this job. She's just there saying, I'm the new director. Cool. I'm also here to find my brother. It's like, what? I don't know. That wasn't real clear to me, but again, the strangeness of this game is what kept me going. So you walk around a little bit. You end up finding the office of the, the current, but technically, you know, the last director who's still there, I guess, ready to you know, kind of pass everything on to you. But you find he's dead, and his name's Mr. Trench. He's dead, supposedly from a gunshot wound to his head, because you find this badass fucking RoboCop gun right next to him. That's not even like it's not even a traditional gun that that has, you know, traditional human made rounds, but this thing shoots something, man. I don't know what the hell it shoots, but it shoots something to stop something dead in their tracks. And it kind of, there's parts to it that kind of float in the air space. It's, you know, it's like the gun's put together and it just kind of just, it hovers. I'm telling you, it's, this episode is extremely hard for me because the game is extremely hard, extremely difficult to describe. So you pick up the gun. That's your sidearm. That's your main weapon throughout the entire game. So he looks like he committed suicide. You go ahead and you explore a bit more and then you start finding, the enemies. And the enemies right now, there's no tutorial, like traditional tutorial in this game. So you kind of have to look up the controls yourself. Obviously things like the right trigger fires the gun and you have aiming. Everything's very, very basic here, but it's been a little while since I played Control, but I do not remember a traditional long tutorial for it. So you just kind of get right into it. So you encounter your first enemies. Now you find that these enemies throughout the game are actually employees of the FBC. And what happened throughout this whole building is that there's a kind of possession, like an otherworldly or other timeline or something strange. Something was released that the Bureau was studying that basically incapacitated some people, because you'll find people just floating in the air. Again, weird. And then you find others who attack you because they are possessed with this entity, which is called, which Jesse Faden calls the Hiss, for the lack of a better term, because of the sound that you hear it make. The game's really creepy, and this entity makes things even creepier. So after defeating some enemies, you come to a large room, which is kind of, it's kind of an outside kind of lobby to where the main conference room, the main boardroom is for this building. And throughout the game, you find like scattered, sealed off rooms that are kind of like bunkers. And so the first one you find, you hear somebody talking to you through like this little intercom thing, and there's some survivors in there. There's some survivors throughout the game, but not many. So the first person you actually find that you interact with in the game is a research specialist named Emily Pope, which I'll admit, she's so enthusiastic and cooperative and entirely more lighthearted than she should be, given the circumstances, the extremely messed up circumstances in this game, that I had trouble trusting her almost until the very end of the game. I kept expecting there to be some kind of twist where she had something to do, you know, with the events, that kind of stuff. But no, she's actually she's an ally in the game, and you go back to her, and this is a person that you kind of keep going back to whenever you complete an objective, and it kind of unlocks more objectives throughout the game. So you find her, she explains a little bit more what they were doing. She explains that some of the bosses that you face in the game are employees of the FBC. And whatever it is that they were studying, something was let out, completely screwed everything up. Now they have to try to get rid of the hiss, what they call it. Reaching this point in the game, this is a crucial part of the game because this sets in motion everything else that you do. So you find yourself coming back to this spot pretty frequently. Once you're here and you meet Emily Pope, she gives you a debriefing of what happened. You do what's called, you cleanse your first control point. So a control point is any point in the game where you can fast travel to, but you have to unlock it. And unlocking it means you have to defeat all the nearby enemies. And then usually these control areas, these control point areas have, oh man. So when there's this presence, this hiss or whatever in this particular control point area, the whole building, like the architecture, is just kind of moving and shifting. And I can describe it as just kind of like, I don't know, parts of the wall jut out from the wall. Like it's, I don't know. I guess I can't describe it because it's just that weird looking. But the architecture and the physicality of the room is just really strange, different. And then once you do what's called cleansing a control point, you hit the appropriate button. She does this thing where she goes down, she smacks the ground, and she cleanses this control point, which makes that particular area safe now. So that's an unlocked travel, like instant kind of travel point that you can go. Which thankfully, because the map is so large, you would just want to kill yourself having to walk back and forth every single time you need to make multiple trips. And this is something that you want to get used to and do often, because once you meet Emily Pope, and she gives you more and more information on what's going on, she sends you to different parts of the oldest house because she's now aware that you have this ability that you can, fight the hiss back in some way. Like you can cleanse areas. So she's like, oh man, well, you can do that. So why don't you go ahead and, kick some ass for us, right? And she'll say like, hey, such and such used to be the head of this department or something. He's now possessed and, go take care of it. So the control points come in handy because you're going to be going all over the map, going back and forth to where Emily says that there's, that there's an issue. All the meanwhile, you're obviously looking for your brother as well. So you gather a little more information on what happened to your brother and whether or not the FBC knows about him or knows where he's at. So that's pretty much the gist of the game. The only thing from here on out is, for you to find out more of the story, more of the details of the story. And goodness gracious, the bosses, the enemies, they get, oh God, they get so much harder. So make sure that you level yourself up quickly and frequently, because you will need it for the next boss fight. The control points also allow you to level up your weapon, your abilities, and oh my God, her abilities. Okay, I can't believe I missed this one too. Things just keep getting weirder and weirder here. So she has a ability, like a power. I don't know. So all of a sudden, she's able to cleanse a control. It's kind of like an exorcism or something like that. That she's able to. I don't know if it's either absorb. I don't think it's absorb, but just do away with the. I don't know, man. The fucking evil spirits at a control point. That's all I can describe it as. But she starts gaining other abilities throughout the game when you find what's called objects of power. And you usually get it when you complete an objective, or you know, you're just roaming around and you do different shit. You get an object of power, and then it unlocks a ability. Now, I don't know if it unlocks ability inside of you that you had, or if it just grants you this brand new ability. So you have some really cool ones. You have, I don't know what they're called, so I'm going to go ahead and just kind of give them nicknames here. You have what I call the fucking power slap, where she just kind of, she kind of shoots her hand out in front of her, almost like she, almost like she's face palming you, right? Just like poof. And, it just, what looks like it just disintegrates everything in front of you. It's really strange. I love doing it. If I'm walking through a big office with a bunch of desks, I'll do this power slap and then poof, the desk just basically fucking splinters and all, you know, papers go up in the air and shit. It's really fun to do. If you do the poof power slap against the wall, there's a big chunk of the wall that's either cracked or missing or something like that. You can levitate for a short time, and you can, my favorite move. Now you can level these up, which increases the ability's effectiveness, its strength, how much health that it drains from enemies. So you can improve them and get stronger. So my favorite power ability you can get is what's kind of, it's kind of a fucking like Jedi kind of, think of Darth Vader, okay, when he can just kind of force grab you and lift you up in the air, and kind of, he holds his hand up and you're also kind of levitating. It's that kind of bit. So you can do that, let's say, to a table, and you lift it up just by waving your hand, and you're holding your hand up, and this thing, you know, this table's just floating above you, and you can launch it at somebody, and it's the most satisfying fucking attack in the entire game, because those launches and those hits get harder and harder, and eventually you can do that to like three different objects. So if you're facing off against a group of people and you just like, whoosh, you just lifted almost like telekinetically these objects, these three objects, and you like, you launch them at people, it hits three of them at the same time and it does a lot of damage. My recommendation, my favorite ability is that one. And I really think you would agree with me, because the gun that you use, I forgot to mention this pistol, it does not run out of ammo, which is awesome. You don't have to find ammo throughout the game. You don't have to worry about running out of ammo, but it does run out of juice. Basically, you have like this little meter and you keep hitting the, you know, shooting the gun, and the meter runs out and you just got to wait just a few seconds. And then it just boop, just comes right back up and you can start using it again. So what I like to do is I like to just bombard an enemy or enemies with gunfire. And then when that runs out, then I do that crazy force launch shit. And when I'm doing that, it allows my gun to recharge and I can start using that gun again. And, you know, there's a number of abilities that you can, you can improve upon to make them stronger. And this is the force push and launch thing is awesome. I think you would agree with me. You can also level up your gun. Your gun can do tricks, man. It's really weird. You can do like kind of like rapid fire. You can do what kind of like slower shotgun like blasts that are much more powerful. And the gun kind of changes shape. Since I mentioned before that the gun's pieces kind of levitate and they're kind of like floating. It's weird. It's hard to describe, but you'll know what I'm talking about if you look up some gameplay or if you play the game yourself. But then the pieces will kind of change a bit and it alters the shape of the gun and, you know, makes it look a little meaner when you change that particular ability that the gun has. So you either do rapid shots, it kind of looks like a regular pistol, and then to do the big power shots, it kind of changes to like a more blunt looking, just, I don't know, fucking sawed off shotgun type of deal. Now the combat in the game, it is fair, but it is unforgiving. And I remember the very second boss, which you'll encounter pretty soon after you meet up with Emily Pope. He's your first flying dude. Oh my God, there's guys that fly around that just piss you off to no end. And it took me quite a few tries to defeat him my very first time through the game. But it, you know, once you figure out a technique or a pattern or a strategy for a boss, then it works. But until you figure that out, this game does have some major rage quit moments and gives you those rage quit tendencies. There are some enemies that absolutely take you there, but it's, you know, once you're past them, you're like, God, thank God I don't have to do that anymore. I am no novice when it comes to playing video games. I do consider myself quite a veteran with some years of experience, but some of the bosses were so frustrating. And with a game like Control that has pretty good, I mean, very good replay value, those boss fights are what keeps me from playing the game all the way through again, because they're just, oh God, they were just that difficult. And like I said, once you get them done, man, you just want to say, like, I never want to do that shit again. So let's talk about the game's soundtrack. The original soundtrack had two composers, Petriolanco and Martin Stig Anderson. It does have a very good, you know, kind of a weird vibe that goes with the weird atmosphere of the game. And then you also have riddled throughout the entire game that you can find just as they're, I mean, not really collectibles, but you can unlock songs that will play, that are actually a bunch of licensed tracks by different artists. So for example, if you come across like this radio or whatever and you can interact with it, you hit it and then it starts playing that track. I thought that was pretty cool. And I've actually discovered some real bitchin' songs that I have listened to on YouTube in its entirety. And I thought that was a really neat, very, you know, contrast between the way the game looks and that brutalist style. But then you have these real modern tracks, and I thought that was a nice touch. So here's the thing. Here's the reality of this recording. I'm actually on my third cup of coffee when I usually just have one on a night that I record. I'll record and I'll actually edit and complete the episode on one cup of coffee. I'm on my third, and I'm on my, let's see, it's hour basically two, maybe two and a half, about 2.5 hours I've been working on this. When recording and editing on recording night usually takes 2 to 3 hours. I don't know if I'm going to be coming in under that 3 hour mark, simply because, I mean, let's face it, I think I fucking rambled on the entire episode, and I don't think I actually told you anything about the game, and I really thought I was. It's Control, you should definitely try out, because you'll know exactly what I mean. I loved it. I thought it was a very fun game, and I binge played it for a little over a week and a half. I came down here and I would turn it on a bit until, of course, my son would get bored watching me play it and then wanted me to turn on something else. But I just kept coming back to it. Now, if you've played this game, please tell me you understand my struggles with recording this episode. And if you end up playing the game, please tell me that you understand my struggles with recording this episode. I hope I was able to get the message across on how weird but also enjoyable the game is. I love what Remedy did. I love what they came up with as far as the writing. I love the fact that I've talked to other people that say, hey, if you didn't understand the game, welcome to the club, because neither do I. So please reach out to me if you want to discuss it, and if you have any theories on anything else about the game, or maybe it's tie-ins with other Remedy games. I cannot believe I'm reaching the 36-minute mark, which may be a little bit shorter with some of the editing and snipping I might do, but this absolutely felt like I just talked at you and I just had a conversation about something that I knew a lot about, but at the same time, didn't know shit about. But this pretty much wraps it up for this episode of Video Games and Coffee, going over Control. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you very much for listening. Don't know yet what is the next game I'll be covering. The only hint I can tell you, it's most likely, I don't know, if it ends up not being, don't be mad at me, but I think the next game is going to cover, and it's going to be an old one. It's going to be an old one. It's going to be a cult classic. I think that's what I'm going to do. If it ends up not being that, I'm sorry, but know that this one that I'm working on, it's coming. It's coming. It'll be a good one. For those of you that enjoy this particular game that I'm thinking about, you'll appreciate it, because those who love it, we really love it. So thank you very much, everybody. Yeah, you know, give it a shot or not. Let me know either way. Reach out to me on Instagram. I'm on there quite a bit. Have fun, stay safe, be good to each other, and I will talk to everyone next time.